Portrait of Fred Allen continues. Our narrator, Jack Haley.
Fred once said if he could choose some other profession, he would have become a writer. But he was a writer. A good one, as Harry Von Zell points out.
His ability to so delicately exaggerate and satirize commonplace characters everyone knows or has known resulted in many lasting creations. One could not forget such people as the leather-lunged, flagrant political orator of the South, Senator Claghorn.
They heard this character that later he named Senator Claghorn, which, of course, made him famous. More than anything else, the fact that Fred named him and wrote the material for him.
Kenny Delmar, sometimes better known as Senator Claghorn.
Fred Allen spent a great deal of time over each character, portrayal, or delineation in the writing of it. And when it came time to be done on the air, he never once gave the slightest kind of reading to follow. He felt that you were hired for the job, and he had confidence enough in you and in your interpretation that he never, as many directors will do, give you a different angle or a different idea or a different perception of what he meant. He expected you to know, and whether he was dissatisfied or not, you were never aware of it. In other words, Fred Allen was never, in the sense that we come to think of it now, a boss. He was always a friend. And, of course, this made his shows and his rehearsals the most unusual, the most dignified.
Another member of the alley, Alan Reed, who played Falstaff Openshaw.
It was a wonderful device that Fred created, Alan's Alley. He always based his humor on current events, on topical things, which is why he was able to last so long and maintain so high a standard. He didn't have to dig in joke files and find jokes. He made his own jokes about things that were happening.
Well, Portland, here we are back in Alan's Alley. Say, the senator's home tonight. His hound dog is curled up there under the porch. See it?
Somebody knocks.
Yes, I know.
Claghorn's the name, Senator Claghorn.
I know. You're from Dixie.
When I eat crackers in bed, I only eat Georgia crackers.
Now, wait a minute.
When I leave New York, I always take the South Ferry.
Now, wait a minute.
Way down upon the Swanee River.
Look, you're a little...
I'm singing Swanee songs.
Well, I know what you're singing.
Show some reverence, son. Kneel down and uncover.
Now, wait a minute. I wonder how Titus Moody is doing.
Howdy, bub.
You're starting to sound like Dennis Day, Titus. Johnny, Mr. Moody. Do you have any trouble sleeping?
I only half sleep.
Half sleep?
I got short eyelids.
Well, are you the only one awake on the farm?
My cow had insomnia.
Your cow didn't sleep at all?
The bags under her eyes were so big, I didn't know which end to milk.
You were confused, eh?
First time I milked the wrong end and got two buckets full of homogenized tears.
Let's try this next door here.
No.
Oh, Mrs. Nussbaum.
You were expecting maybe Hoagie Carbuncle.
Tell me, Mrs. Ann, do you have trouble sleeping?
Who could sleep? Every night with his dreaming, my husband Pierre is waking me up.
He dreams, huh?
Always his different things.
Dreams his different things? How do you mean?
One night, Pierre is dreaming he is the lone stranger.
Yeah.
All night long, he is yelling, "Hi-ho, Silver!"
Hi-ho, Silver, huh?
Upstairs is living a Mr. Silver.
Yeah?
All night, he is yelling back, "Hi-ho, Nussbaum!"
Hi, buddy.
Hey, Ajax Cassidy, what is that green flag with the gold harp on it, Ajax?
Erin Gobra.
You mean you're celebrating?
Haven't you heard the news, you heathen infidel? Ireland is free.
Have you been celebrating all week?
Ah, me boy, as soon as word reached Kerrigan's, we all drank a toast to the Republic.
Yes.
Then we drank a toast to Eamon de Valera.
Yes.
Next, a toast to King George.
Yes.
Then a toast to Martin Downey.
Yes.
Then a voice said, this drink is on the house.
On the house.
How we all got up there, nobody knew.
Hey, Jack, you are in bad shape.
I'm not long for this world.
Fred by now was at the top of his profession. He could have chosen his friends from among the famous, the brilliant, the great people of our times. More often he chose his friends for their own personal worth, as restaurateur Max Asnes recalls.
There are some people, when they get on the top, they get so dizzy. And they look on people when they are not as successful as they are, and they look down on them. But Fred was a type that nobody was ever too small for him. He was never too big for anybody. He used to come into my place, and when he used to come in, you know, there are some people want privacy. He loved people, and that's the reason people loved him. He used to come into my place, he used to eat turkey and matzahs and orange juice. He was a good citizen, a good showman, and a good friend.
This is Jimmy Durante. Fred and I used to patronize the same restaurant, Luigini's on 48th Street, an Italian restaurant. Every other night that I used to go into Luigini's, Fred would be there at his regular table. So one night, he said, Jim, he says, come on in the kitchen with me. He says, I'm going to cook my own macaroni. So he goes into the kitchen. I goes in with him. Luigini goes in with him. And he puts the macaroni in the boiling water. And as we're talking and talking, all of a sudden, that the bowl overflows and the jam is flooded with this water. So Luigini threw his boat out of the kitchen, and he was served that night at his regular table.
A few years later, in my place for 31 years and a half.
Luigino.
When he come to my place, he eat a big bowl of salad, special Luigino dress, with the cheese, with the Italian prosciutto, he call it ham, call it any way you like, but that's called prosciutto. Now, next plate, he eat a Friedrich, that's a big plate of spaghetti. A plenty garlic. All my place is smell garlic. I don't say stink. It's my smell garlic. And here, plenty. Oh, yes, my place is smell nice, you know. Oh, yes. You gotta love that man because he don't bother nobody. He's very plain, artist, and a sincere man. Very sincere.
Fred got a lot of pleasure out of writing to people in witty and wonderful letters they were. Dennis Day.
When anyone received a letter from Fred Allen out here on the coast, it was like getting a first edition. Everyone would get a call and say, I want you to come over and read the letter, because it was invariably, it was such a funny letter. He loved to keep in touch with people, and he, you know, all of his letters were in small letters. He never used any capitals, but they were always gems of wit.
Yes, and gems of wit they were.
Goodman Ace.
It was in one of the many acerbic letters I got from Fred when I was in Hollywood that he wrote his now famous description of the West Coast. California, he said, is a wonderful place to live if you happen to be an orange. One day I asked Fred why he always typed in lowercase. Doesn't the shift key on your typewriter work, Fred? And he said, yes, but I've never been able to shift for myself.
In spite of the fact that Fred lived directly across the street from a fashionable athletic club, he preferred to exercise at a YMCA several blocks away. Sometimes Harry Tugan would go over to the Y with Fred.
Fred was a creature of habit and routine, and anything that disturbed his habit disturbed him very much. His habit even went so far as to follow him into the gymnasium. I used to go to the YMCA with him about twice a week. Fred would be in working with the medicine ball, and he always threw the medicine ball exactly 100 times to this fellow who was working with him, and then boxed exactly three rounds and then played two games of doubles in handball. And I remember once when he got a phone call after he'd only thrown about 50 medicine balls and we had to leave in a hurry for some conference with an agent. And for the rest of that week, Fred was complaining about how he hadn't had a chance to work out that week and felt sluggish and not up to par. It was routine, and he had to stick with it.
One of Fred's pals at the YMCA was Joe DeGray.
We boxed, I guess about 10 years together, two or three times a week. Every once in a while, there'd be a check in the mail from me, $100 or $200. You never knew what it was going to be, even though I never expected anything. It was my pleasure. He's some man.
Another YMCA buddy, Mike Jakes.
Fred did call us his stable. And we all liked the idea. We liked the name Stable. It seemed to bring us so much closer to him. It's a funny thing. As soon as Fred would hit the West Side YMCA there, everybody, things were quiet there until Fred got in. And everybody seemed to be so enthused when they'd see him come in, because he always had a smile on his face and always something funny to say.
Most of the year, you'd find Fred either at some radio studio or hunched over a typewriter getting next week's shows ready. But when vacation time came around, he enjoyed going to Maine and visiting old friends there.
I'm Bill Mullen from Old Orchard Beach, Maine. I've known Fred Allen for over 20 years. I can always remember our golfing at the Orchard Beach Country Club summers. And, of course, Fred never played golf because he never did anything he wasn't perfect in. And, of course, golf wasn't one of them. But in these golfing outings, Fred would caddy for Rear Admiral Father Bob White. And one summer, a song was very popular called Doing the What Comes Naturally. And Fred made a verse up to this song that he dedicated to Father White. And I can remember it so well. It goes like this. Father White shoots very tight. Tough shots, he won't risk 'em. When he misses, all he says is Dominus Vobiscum.
My wife and I came to this country in 1946. And so, it could be true to say that we came in just for the last act. A very glorious last act.
James Mason.
He was, in a sense, our welcoming committee. He gave us help in our life in New York. He helped us to feel at home in America. But most of all, he made us feel good. He made us feel good in this new country that we'd come to live in. He made us love New York. He made us love America. By no positive propaganda, I assure you, he just made us feel at home.
An endearing picture of Fred as the American in Paris is recalled by Tallulah Bankhead.
When Fred Allen and I worked together for 2 years on the big show, he was certainly the Rock of Gibraltar to all of us. And I remember, as I think you probably all know, who've read so much and heard so much about him, he was a deeply religious man. And every Sunday we'd break between about 10 and 11:30, and he and his beloved Portland would go to church. And I'd always say, well, darling, burn a candle for me. And when we went to London and Paris to do the big show, when we were in Paris, Fred was a great walker, and he very rarely took a taxi or a car, and he wanted to find a church, and I asked him, couldn't I give them a lift in my car? And we had a French chauffeur, and he drove him to this beautiful church. And as Fred got out, he said, you think we'll need an interpreter in there?
Mort Green and George Foster.
In Paris, he came up with some of the funniest lines I personally have ever heard. He said that the food in Paris is served in flames. For the first time, the American in Paris enjoys food he can read by. He also had the great lines about the money. He said that, you know, French money is made of ridiculously thin paper. And he said that it was the thinnest paper he'd ever seen in public. He also had lines like, French money is Kleenex with murals. He said he'd been blowing his nose in it for 5 days before he found out it was money. Practically nothing was sacred in that respect to Fred, and many people mistook this as bitterness, which it was not at all. It was the man's innate sense of what was comic and what was attackable in any given situation, and this included, incidentally, himself.
One of the great classics humorous creations came about when Fred and Tallulah satirized a Mr. and Mrs. Breakfast Team.
Hey, knucklehead! Get out of that bed. We've got a program to do.
Will you quit yapping? 6 o'clock in the morning. Who's up to listen to us? A couple of garbage collectors and some burglars, maybe. What a racket.
Well, if you want to go back to hustling gardenias in front of Charles, go right ahead.
Yeah, and what were you? Queen of the powder room at the brass rail. My mouth tastes like a sand hog just pulled his foot out of it. Cat, I'm sleepy.
Well, why don't you stay home some night and try sleeping?
Sleeping on that Pasternak Pussy Willow mattress? Pussy Willow. It's stuffed with cat hair. Every time I lie down on that cat hair, my back arches.
Oh, stop beefing. Here's your coffee.
Well, it's about time. What are you trying to do, poison me?
It's that Makista's Vita Fresh coffee. It won't kill you.
It won't, eh? Why do you think the government makes them put that skull and crossbones on the can? Look at that. I spilled some on my vest.
Oh, you're such a slob.
Yeah.
Now get that bottle of little panther spot remover.
You're not putting any of that atom juice on me.
In 1955, Fred was awarded the Radio Pioneer's Citation for bringing to radio and television the finest traditions of the American stage for over 25 years. Fred Allen created characters of enduring and endearing quality. Who can forget his one long pan detective skit?
Ah, greetings, and Shula Malakam, kiddie. Detective One Long Pan, Oriental Sam Spade on job. All right, Louis Loptagon, Long Pan catching everyone. All right, Louis Loptagon. Hoo-hoo, Long Pan, an exceptional voice tonight. Maybe catch him fan letter from Jackie Eigen.
I see.
China, click a people. Duck soup for One Long Pan.
Are you linger, Mr. Buffington?
Chong!
Long Pan!
Ding ho!
Ding ho!
Sing mu fu, sing tong.
Oh, hui fang ling lung mu gai pen.
Oh, mu gu gai pen.
Oh, ding wu fu.
Chung, Long Pan go to school together.
Hong Kong, you class of 28.
To the table down at Lom Fong.
Now let's relive Fred's traditional Christmas show.
You see, being Santa Claus is just a pain in one century after the other. I'm giving the world back to Rand and McNally. I'm
through. Oh, please don't say that, Santa. Have pity on us kids. We'll have no toys.
No, Santa ain't a-moving, son. This is one Christmas I'm going to enjoy in peace.
Please, Santa Claus.
Oh, shucks. Hush your crying, son. Hey, Ma.
Yes, Santa?
Where's my mittens, my bag, my reindeer, my sleigh?
Santa, you ain't a-going.
Yep, I'm a-going, Ma.
Honest Santa Claus?
Yep, son, I changed my mind.
Oh, thank you, Santa.
Christmas ain't Christmas without Santa Claus. I'm giving the world one more chance.
Can I have a statement for all the kiddies, Santa?
You bet you can, sonny. Just say, it's Merry Christmas. Hi, old Dunder. Hi, old Blitzen.
He always had a little dab of humor. I call it little dabs because he issued them in dabs. You couldn't pin Fred down. He would have a dab of humor for everything.
Herb Schreiner.
Fred had one bit of philosophy which I think is worth remembering, along with a great deal of his humor, and that was that he once said that if you want what you have, you'll always have what you want.
In his last letter to Doc Rockwell, he wrote,
Doc, he says, I can't eat salt, I can't eat sugar, I can't have any meat, I can't lie on the sand, I can't go in the water. I may just as well stay down here and stay in a closet. And a sort of a prophetic little part he had in there, I don't know how it came up, but he says the way to live is to live each day as if that day may be the last, and someday you'll be right.
His close friend, Donald Voorhees, remembers Fred at this time of his life.
Each year, Fred dreaded more the chore of this weekly radio program that he had to do. And toward the end of the season, he'd be really quite beat. As a matter of fact, that brought on the... no question but what that brought on, the hypertension, high blood pressure. Because it got to be more and more of just a dreadful chore as time went on. Because Fred would never settle for repeats or imitations.
Fred looked at television with a jaundiced eye.
I have been in vaudeville, I have been in the theater, I have been in motion pictures, and I have been in radio. Currently, I am in trouble. Trouble spelled sideways is television. Television has not only changed the lives of the performers, but the lives of many innocent people. I heard of a sad case where, after a couple got married on the bride and groom television program, they learned that their marriage will not be legal in 12 states for 6 weeks until the kinescope is shown there.
In spite of his jokes about television, the medium appealed to his show business blood, and he couldn't stay away from it. Mr. Weaver.
Talent like Fred's was needed by television, and if it had not been for his health, he would have, I'm sure, lightened up his formula, and the Town Hall Tonight or its television version would have become one of the great classics of TV.
All his life, Fred had wanted to be a writer, and it was a source of great happiness to him that his Treadmill to Oblivion became a bestseller. When he died on March 17th of this year, he left behind an unfinished autobiography, which he wrote in a small, dusty office he rented for Mort Green and George Foster.
One of the most touching things was coming back to this office the Tuesday after Fred had died. He'd been there on Saturday. We hadn't been in the office for, 6 or 7 days. And we never quite were sure when Fred had been in the office. We knew he was there every day, and yet there was never any sign that Fred had occupied this place, except if you knew Fred. Everything was neat as a pin. The dust was still neat. He disturbed so little, and yet disturbed so much with his tremendous talent. But personally, he was the most methodical, in the finer sense of what methodical means, rather than against the drudgery sense of it. We walked in that following Tuesday and opened the refrigerator, and there were the two bottles of apple juice and the 4 or 5 pieces of fruit and the little container of cottage cheese. And in the bottom of the wastebasket, which was quite clean, were a few little shavings from the last pencils he had sharpened. But when I opened the secretary drawer, and in it were 12 brown paper bags, neatly folded. These were the bags with which he had brought to work the fruit, the apple juice, and so on. He never threw them away in case we might possibly need them.
And the big show, there was a theme song written by Magic Wilson that we always ended the show with. And I would like to end this tribute by quoting the last line on the big show. May the good Lord bless and keep you until we meet again. Good night, darling.
Ladies and gentlemen, His Eminence Francis Cardinal Spellman, Archbishop of New York.
What I always admired about Fred Allen was the same quality that Will Rogers possessed as a great interpreter of American life. The quality was essential and unassuming charity. He loved and served his God and country well. He was kind and helpful to his neighbor. And his neighbor was every human being. He was ever ready in his help to those in need, and was especially loyal and generous to those of his own profession. His humor, universal and popular as it was, never was offensive. Fred was a truly religious man. He frequented the famed Actors' Church, St. Malachy's, close to the glittering lights of Broadway. And in the midst of those lights, he lived his life publicly, but also quietly, as he humbly practiced his faith. Fred Allen loved life and lived it well, but was conscious that earthly life is a preparation for life eternal. He made his diagnosis of life and his prognosis of afterlife in the language of the theater. This is only the prologue here. The big show is up above.
Listening to Biography in Sound, which tonight presented transcribed A Portrait of Fred Allen. We wish to express our appreciation to our moderator, Jack Healy, and to the few of Fred's many friends who appeared on the program. On the NBC staff, our thanks go to Earl Hamner, writer, Robert Wogan, director, and to the many who helped in its preparation. This is Ed Herlihy. This has been an NBC Radio Network production.